Good afternoon, brethren. I'd like to welcome any guests we have here today. I know we've got some folks traveling. We're getting ready to head out for camp. We're excited about that. Not so much about the temperature, so if you'd continue to pray about that, I know I would appreciate it because I do sweat a lot. You could ask Terry Buchanan, who played basketball against me. Well, today I want to talk about fasting in my split sermon. Why do people fast? Individuals fast for many different reasons. Varies, as we're familiar with, can vary by faith and religious beliefs. I did a little bit of research. Actually, it's common certainly in the Christian world, especially in our beliefs, but I also found that many different religious backgrounds do fast for different reasons. Hindus, Buddhists, obviously the Jewish or Judaism believes in fasting for different occasions. I'm not going to dive into that today. Individuals will fast based on medicinal reasons. Could be because you're not feeling well, maybe a stomach illness. Could be based on pain. Individuals that have deep pain many times do not feel like eating. And that obviously can be cause for fasting. Political reasons. Individuals I see in the line of work I'm in prisons, we find individuals that go on hunger strikes. They go on hunger strikes not for days, but many times for weeks. And courts will get involved and many times force the individual to get on a feeding tube. Did a little bit of research about that. There's actually a woman in India. Now, this is off the internet, but there were pictures, so it may not, I didn't verify it too deeply, but it said she'd been on a fast for 10 years because they had forced her to use a feeding tube. She'd been on a feeding tube using it for 10 years. The longest water fast, that's where you don't eat food, on record, and this is the Guinness Book of World Records, is by a Chinese doctor. He went without food and only drank water for 49 days. 49 days in a row, he did not eat any food. And he had beat an American before that who had gone for 44 days. Well, there's also different kinds of fasting. There's dry fasting, which is what we're familiar with. No food, no water. You go without any sustenance at all. There's the water fasting we just referred to. There's juice fasting, fruit fasting, vegetable fasting, rice fasting, and my personal favorite from my childhood is sneak candy into your bedroom on atonement and your parents will never find out fasting. Yeah, that didn't work so well. I remember I had lifesavers and I'd gotten too close to the heater. And so I snuck into a room and I'd closed the door. I was probably 10. And I went to open them up and take one off and they were all melted and I was trying to bite them off. And anyway, I got busted. And so don't do that, kids. Your parents are smarter than that. I still blame it on the deaconess, though, that gave out candy before feast. That was a mistake, I think. So let's turn. I'm going to turn to the Holman Bible Dictionary. It's a dictionary I reference. It is spelled after my last name, coincidentally, but it's a good reference I use. And just look at how they define fasting. You're reading on page 479. It says, fasting is the laying aside of food for a period of time when the believer is seeking to know God in a deeper experience. It is to be done as an act before God in the privacy of one's own pursuit of God. And then it references a number of scriptures here. You're welcome to borrow the book if you'd like to look at those. Fasting is to be done with the object of seeking to know God in a deeper experience. Fasting relates to a time of confession. Fasting can be a time of seeking a deeper prayer experience and drawing near to God in prevailing prayer. The early church often fasted in seeking God's will for leadership in the local church. When the early church wanted to know the mind of God, there was a time of prayer and fasting. Okay? So that's just a reference from a kind of a secondary book there. I don't have a whole lot of space here, so I'm going to set that down there. Hope it doesn't fall off. So what we will see through the message today is that fasting is used as a way to draw us closer to God by being humbled, helping us to seek His will as we strive to be in accord with our Father. I'm going to repeat that. Fasting is used as a way to draw us closer to God by being humbled, helping us to seek His will as we strive to be in accord with our Father. So today in the scenario I'm going to work through is actually in Isaiah. We're going to work through this chapter 58 of Isaiah. And we're going to use this Old Testament example to look at the rich value and instruction related to fasting. It will hopefully bring to light why it is so important to keep fasting as a part of our spiritual diet as Christians. And for my own conscience sake, being as I'm in healthcare, I will say, you know, fasting is meant for individuals that are generally healthy, okay? And it's not advisable to fast when you are of poor health, in particular when you have chronic conditions like diabetes. So please make sure you talk to your doctor if there's any questions there. So that way I make sure and get that out there, because it's important you obviously do it and be safe while you're doing it. Okay? So let's turn to Isaiah chapter 58. Go ahead and mark this spot, because we'll be coming back to it back and forth a number of times. We're going to work through the whole chapter here. Here Isaiah speaking and really going through what is a pendulum process of explaining first the way not to go about it, coming to a pivotal point in the chapter, and then explaining the benefits and the fruits of going about it. Okay? So chapter 58, verse 1, "Cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet, tell my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins." So here it's not, the point isn't go to them quietly, go to them and whisper. It's saying go to them boldly, using a trumpet as an analogy. So the challenge here is basically go determine what the sins are. You know, the sinners need to understand, they need to evaluate their lives, and they need to uproot and take that sin and remove it from their lives. So here in verse 2 it says, "Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching God." So here we see that there's a process that they're going through, and it's a delicate issue because he's basically saying, look, you're showing me the outward signs and doing the right things. You're going through the motions, such as the Pharisees would have done, but we see that that's not your true nature. That's not the heart of how you're approaching fasting, and what we'll get to in a moment. I reflect on today's society. Working with many different business professionals, it's very obvious to me that individuals put on a facade. And it's acting the role of being the corporate citizen. And I see it every day. And what is most intriguing to me is that as you work with individuals and you begin to build a relationship, you begin to understand that the word friendship is a precious thing. Friendship is pretty rare, really. And at work, I think it can be even rarer, especially when you get into tough situations. We're going through layoffs right now. We're going to be cutting about roughly a quarter of our overhead as a company. We've lost that much business this year. And what is interesting to me is that you quickly find out the true nature of individuals when they get inside that pressure cooker, when they begin to become less focused on playing the role of the corporate citizen and more about what's in it for me. Quickly, people begin to look at themselves and say, okay, I know we're having layoffs. I'm going to do whatever I can to undercut, to make sure that people see what I'm doing is profiting the company, and that maybe somebody else isn't being such a good worker as I am. And that's when you really begin to see that people's true nature many times is selfish and greed-driven. And that is the world we live in. Let's go to verse 3. Here in chapter 58 of Isaiah, "Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen? You know what? I've fasted. Haven't you seen me fast? Why have we afflicted our souls and you take no notice? In fact, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure and exploit your laborers. Or you're actually rougher on your laborers. You're actually taking the opportunity to make it harder on them. Well, fasting is not an exercise to get what we want. Instead, it gives us clarity to align our spiritual attitude with God's will. And this certainly isn't about looking at the struggles we've had over the last few years, where fasting became one of the topics of discussion. My point today is really not to be corrective. It's more to remind us that we have Satan, who is, you know, roaming about as a lion trying to devour us. Fasting can be a wonderful tool for us to align with God's will. You know, the difference is submitting to that will and then knowing that God is merciful. God will be a giving Father. He will bless us, and He will give us what we need, not so much what we want. And that's critical as we go about the process of fasting. So let's turn over to Romans 12. We'll read verses 1 and 2 there. Romans 12 and verses 1 and 2 says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So fasting gives us the opportunity, if we go about it correctly, to strip away the distractions of the world, find and be renewed by the alignment we have with God's will as we study and pray during that fasting process, and it gives us a focus on God and not on the world. And I'll give you a personal example just related to the topic. 2009, went through a difficult process. We had lost two obviously close family members, and we were dealing with a lot of tragedy. And a lot of that stress culminated in I'd had a condition called Meniere's disease. It's actually not a disease, it's a syndrome. It's not curable. And I began to have more and more vertigo episodes where I was falling down in airports and exercise facilities and business meetings, and unfortunately we began to throw up and all kinds of crazy stuff because I couldn't see. And finally got to the point where I needed brain surgery. They actually cut out a part of my skull, went in, and cut out a section of my vestibular nerve. It took out my motion nerve. And my point is not to tell you about that piece. It's more about the aftermath. They told me that when I would wake up, it would be very difficult because you've lost all of your motion on one side. So I remember waking up. And I remember Tammy was in the room, and I think my mom and Jenny, my other mom, and basically I opened my eyes and they wouldn't look straight. They just fluttered. They just bounced all over the place. And so me and I got sick and began to throw up again, which I was familiar with already. And so 24 hours, I mean, literally, I'm just sick the whole time because you can't see. Your mind is recalibrating all of its balance because it lost all of one side. And it's smart enough to figure out how to do that, fortunately. Well, what was humbling and how it relates to this message as it relates to fasting and being humbled is I remember the first time I walked, the trainer that came in, she was maybe 130 pounds. And I'm 6'4 and we'll say 200 plus. And I remember she got up, she put a harness on me, and she put this tether on me, and she said, okay, we're going to learn to walk again. And I remember standing up and I thought I was going to pull her down if I fell. And she began to basically drag me. And I began to scoot along. And my point is that we are very temporary. Things can happen so fast. Fasting, by taking away all the distractions of what I had been dealing with, whatever it was, hobbies or selfish interests, I quickly realized what was important. And it was not all those extra things. It was God, it was my family, and it was getting healthy again and just sticking to the basics. It was all I could think about because I didn't want to eat for days. And it really made me realize, man, all that other stuff is baggage. It's just baggage. And when you fast and you really understand the basic nature of how you're sustained by God, you realize what your priorities have to be. Let's turn back to now Isaiah 58. Yeah, fortunately, I did learn to walk again, so that was good. But I had a lot of help. In Isaiah 58, verse 5, we'll read here, picking up, "Is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush, and to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast? And an acceptable day to God? So lay out your sackcloth, you know, here, see me that I'm suffering, I'm fasting." You know, God is challenging us to fast, but to do it in a nature that's private. We fast based on the opportunity for us as Christians individually to become closer to God. It's not anything we're doing to show off or to accomplish our own agenda. This is all about God's agenda. It's all about making sure our relationship is in alignment with our Father. Let's turn over now to James 4. Turn to James 4, read verses 4 through 5. James 4 and verse 4. "Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know the friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think that the Scripture says in vain, the Spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously? But he gives more grace, therefore he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble." So this relates strongly with fasting in that we must break down the desires of the world. We must humble our hearts. In that process, we draw near to God. And only then do we have the most direct lifeline to God in being able to understand His will as His Spirit works in us. You know, and I thought about, an analogy here. You remember the movie Shrek, and the donkey and the ogre are walking along. And the ogre says, Shrek says, "Well, ogres, you know, we have layers." And the donkey says, "Okay, you know, give me an analogy. We're like onions." And the donkey says, "Well, I don't like onions. The onions stink. They don't smell good. How about cake? Cake has layers, right?" And then he goes on and profounds to say, "Well, parfait. But, you know, everybody loves parfait. Parfait has layers, right?" Well, the point is there's layers of closeness that make up our world, okay? Starting usually on the peripheral with entertainment, cars, hobbies, our selfish interests, issues with society, work friends, close friends, family, God, okay? God's obviously at the core. Well, part of fasting is understanding what layers we're peeling away to get to that core. And that's part of the message Isaiah is trying to get across is, you can't do this. You can't do fasting to try and show off and show God that you can just do the things that you think will make Him happy physically. It's all about the heart. So Isaiah 58, let's turn back to Isaiah 58. And we'll pick up again here in verse 6. "Is this not the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke?" So here I'm going to reference again in the Bible dictionary the term yoke. Just give you a little bit of an example here. Yoke, here described, is a wooden frame placed on the backs of draft animals to make them pull in tandem. The simple yokes consisted of a bar with two loops, either of a rope or wood, which went around the animal's necks. More elaborate yokes had shafts connected to the middle with the animals, which the animals pulled plows or other implements. The word is used most often in the Bible to speak of slavery, bondage, and hardship. Positive usages include the yoke of Christ and the joint nature of the church's work. So here, you may not be able to see it, but there's a picture here, and it's actually a yoke between a mule and a cow pulling a handmade plow there, okay? Just as an example of what a yoke is. So here we are to understand yoke here is negative. Yoke here is describing the worldly yoke that goes about us that we must, in fasting, break down and throw off. Loosening the bonds of that yoke by fasting helps us then draw closer to brethren, to family, to friends. It gives us the opportunity then to basically take that destructive yoke off of our back and begin to put the yoke that Christ would want on us, which is having the Holy Spirit, using the tools and the implements we're talking about around fasting and prayer. Okay, let's go ahead to go to verse 7. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover them and not hide yourself from your own flesh. The point here is simply that there's greater good by being aware of the burdens of those around us. We have an opportunity to serve. Many of us do serve in a very good light, whether it be a church, whether it be in activities we have at our homes, hospitality, at the feast, at camp coming up. There is an opportunity to serve brethren, friends, neighbors. We can do that through by just opening a door, maybe in a smile. You know, somebody that's going through some tough times and you give them a smile. A lot of times that's encouraging. But we need to remove that carnal attitude so that we can have the opportunity to do that more often. In verse 8, then your light shall break forth like the morning. Here we're transitioning. We're transitioning from the negative side into the positive results of fasting. So it says, then your light shall break through forth like a morning, like a bright light from the morning. Something beautiful. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. That, I think, is very encouraging. You know, especially that last statement, the glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. God will protect you. God has your back. There's obviously in the early part of the verse here, there's an opportunity for spiritual healing as we are fasting and looking for that opportunity. We also have the opportunity to repent, to ask for God to show us our sins, to be more in alignment with Him. And I thought of another analogy. There's the movie Apollo 13. How many of you have seen Apollo 13? Pretty good movie, based on a real life scenario. But there's the scenario when they're inside the pod, and they've had the explosion, and Kevin Bacon and Bill Pullman are arguing. Okay, they're arguing about who didn't mix the tanks right, and why did we have the explosion? And they're arguing with each other. They're angry. Tom Hanks says, guys, you're talking about things that don't matter. That's already happened. He said, we can talk about that all day, but it's not going to get us back down to the earth where we can live. So my point there is simply we have to have focus. If we don't have focus on the right things, we're not going to get to the objective. Okay? We need to have focus in our jobs. We've got to have focus still also in our spiritual lives. So I think part of what Isaiah is saying here is you can do all these extra things and try and show off to God, but until you get down to that right and narrow path, you're not going to have the right focus. You're not going to be in alignment. So let's go ahead and read now verses 9 and 10. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and He will say, here I am. If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness, if you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then your light shall dawn in the darkness, and your darkness shall be as noonday. So I think this is fairly straightforward. in that as we fast, we have the opportunity to have the direct access to God, and He will hear our cry. He will listen if we have the right attitude. It's kind of like I draw the analogy from a mother and a baby. When a mom hears a baby, they know their baby's cry, and they know if it's good, or good not good, but they know if it, they're hurting, if they're in pain, if they're hungry, if they need a diaper change, whatever it may be. God has a sense that's much greater than that, and He knows what we need. Let's turn to Matthew 6, verse 25. Matthew 6 and verse 25. Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and body more than clothing? Well, when we draw near to God, we have the hope of a plan that is awesome. God will provide us with the physical things. Okay, that many times is the peripheral things that we can trust God will provide. Okay, and we shouldn't get distracted then by the distractions of life. We must have the vision and know that His roadmap is for a greater hope. You know, we've got the new website, Life, Hope, and Truth. I think it's a very exciting opportunity, something that we should be using fasting as a tool to ask God that He would bless it, that it would grow. It's a wonderful site so far, but there's tremendous opportunity to build from that site. Let's go ahead and read verse, go back to Isaiah 58. You won't have to turn again. 58 will go to verse 11. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones. You shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. How refreshing that sounds in a drought season that we're in. You know, God's blessings, you know, this shows God is not coming in and out of your life. You know, He's not there one day and out another. God is the one that's consistent. We're the ones that are not consistent. Fasting helps us understand that and know that He can be that lifeline. And He will be the constant nourishment, like the springs of waters that you see that can basically, you know, water your gardens and help things be green and fruitful. He will be that constant nourishment and energy for us. Verse 12, those from among you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. So by using this spiritual fuel, the energy, the zeal that comes from fasting, we have the opportunity to break down the barriers, the things that maybe get in our way related to relationships or offenses, things that maybe are preventing our church from growing. It's being the right example. Now more than ever, we as individuals within this church need to be the right example, and showing the other friends and brethren and family members that have splintered a bit. It's not a time to get in front of them to be proud and to be arrogant. It's to understand this concept that fasting, being humble, is the best way to approach relationships and to communicate in a manner that shows them we want to build relationships. And our goal is to draw closer to God and to understand His plan for all of mankind. So in verses 13 through 14, we'll go ahead and finish up the chapter here. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor Him not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob for your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. So how appropriate it seems that the conclusion of this chapter is focusing on the Sabbath, bringing you back to the central point that defines the church of God. And by honoring the Sabbath, we see that that is a wonderful example, the Sabbath being a blessing to us. And especially as we find the vehicle, by that I mean by using the fast, by using fasting, we are spiritually conditioning ourselves to be focused on the right things and to set aside our own wants and desires. The Sabbath is then a delight to God, and then we are delighting Him. We are honoring Him by being more focused on the day He set aside from creation. And this, obviously adding to this, is Bible study, extra prayer, and then certainly in concert with fasting. So in conclusion, what this chapter should show is that it relates to our lives. It relates to our lives and the importance of fasting and how it gives us the ability to have the right mindset in serving God's will. Fasting should show us that we have a greater purpose than our own busy lives many times represent. Let's regain our focus in God's family and ask Him to give us the humility to serve Him and His will.